Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left Councilwoman Shireen Gourbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. And on the political right, Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Hey, everybody. Good to see you. Good to be with you guys again.
Looking forward to a compelling discussion here, and I want to start by just talking about the state of our political parties. And I think you could say that there's a bit of a reckoning going on. And the way I would set it up is I'm one of those that became politically homeless with Donald Trump, just speaking from the Republican middle. And so the question is, how long is Trump's shadow? You know, once he's out of office, what happens there? Let's break that down. And then I also want to talk about the Democrats and what we've seen there. So, Dan, let's go to you first. How long is President Trump's shadow in your mind?
Man, you know, we've talked about this before on the show, but, it really is interesting how you have a president who is a one-term president, which isn't actually that common in American history, right? We tend to reelect presidents. And so it's interesting when you have a one-term president, what happens to them? Here, though, I have personally taken the Biden win as more of a moratorium on the president and his behavior, and less on, maybe his policies or whatever that might be. And I can talk about the other races that kind of reflect that. But that said, like, there is going to be a base where of people who still want to think that Trump won, and they're going to keep bringing that up. But I do think that 4 years is a political eternity, and trying to stay relevant during that period beyond the base of people, it's going to be really hard. So I'm going to say right now, I hope for the Republican Party standpoint, and we've talked about this before, Natalie, that his shadow is fairly short, and that we find an opportunity to, as Republicans, to, figure out what our brand's going to be, where's our policy positions, and rebuild and try to get another president in 4 years.
Yeah, Dan, you and I are aligned there. I looked at the data the other day, and Republicans have lost, if I have this right, the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 elections. That's something. And as a, part-time demographer, I know what's happening with our country's demographics, and it favors the Democrats, Shireen. What do you think about the length of President Trump's shadow now that he's going to be leaving office in just days?
You know, I think it's 49 days, I think, is the accurate number. There's a really interesting argument, I think, in all of this. And the question that I have is, who is emerging as a leader or the leader of the Republican Party? Frankly, I hope it's Mitch McConnell, who is one of the most destructive forces that I've seen in terms of standing in the way of things like COVID relief, which people are waiting for. They're worried about evictions. They're worried about their businesses being lost, jobs lost. Who is going to be the standard bearer? Who's going to be out there on behalf of rebuilding or reshaping or rethinking what the future of the Republican Party looks like? And I would say that's a place where Democrats have a bevy of basket of beauties to draw from. Young leaders who are inspiring, people who are organizing in many states, people who have really dedicated service to this country, who are problem solvers. I see that on the left. I'm looking for that on the right. And I do think that we're in a healthier democracy when we have that richness of ideas and leadership on both sides. But I don't see many people carrying that forward in a national and a big national profile. Yeah. On the right.
I heard, Shireen, the other day that, some people are asking whether President Trump should campaign in Georgia. And interestingly, right, because he speaks against the mail-in ballots. And somehow in this sort of assault on democracy, he got a little bit beyond political norm breaking.
Yeah.
So a lot of people like his norm breaking, but they don't like the assault on democracy. And so, Dan, what do you think? Do you buy this argument that there's been a sort of a litmus test for sanity in the Republican Party, and that the Lindsey Grahams and the Mitch McConnells aren't meeting the litmus test, and there's somebody out there that's going to, reconstruct and help us pull back together a conservative-led Republican Party?
I would like to say yes. But I've been wrong so many times about everybody's party, right? I did not think Biden stood a chance because from a policy standpoint, I just don't think he aligns with most of America, or at least the Democratic Party does. It turns out that in order for you to, you know, to have good policy and yet, you know, be such a disliked figure is like a toxic combination in election. Who knew? But, you know, you look at where we ought to be. I would love to think that we have the ability to rebuild around someone like a Ben Sasse. You know, you can look through. Let's go even further. And I really like her, you know, Christine. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her name for just a second. Former ambassador to the UN and former governor.
Nikki Haley.
Doggone it.
Nikki Haley.
I need her name.
Nikki Haley. Is it Nikki Haley?
Yeah, thank you. Nikki Haley. Yeah. Yep, exactly. And I think those two offer a very bright perspective on, you know, ideas and where we can go as a country and where the Republican Party can go from a leadership standpoint. And so, hey, I'm hopeful that something good can happen. I really am.
Nice. Nice. Shireen, on the Democratic side, and I mean, you must have been, you were a victim of it, but the down ballot data does not look good for Democrats. And I'd love you to just opine about that, both nationally and locally.
Yeah. So a few things are, there are a number of interesting think pieces, including one from 538 just this week about the relative lack of coattails that Biden had. We can even look at it here, where we saw many more Utahns willing to cast their votes for Joe Biden. But if you look at races, kind of, you know, the second congressional district, the fourth, certainly the third, they the second and third really locked back into the places where they've been election cycle after election cycle. So there wasn't that sort of sweep that I think many people were hoping for. But it wasn't just congressional races. Down to local level state house races across Texas, they thought were very competitive, were not. Right here in Salt Lake County, we certainly saw that with a number of qualified candidates, everyone from the candidate we were running for assessor, Jennifer Frescas, to maybe even my own race. And there are just so many places in our own state legislature, right, where we had seats that were very competitive that came down to just a handful of votes. So a couple of things are going on there. I think we have to do a deeper dive. But one question is, do we just have more? Are Republicans just better about filling out the whole ballot? And I think that is in part true. But then I think there's a bigger question about the kinds of narratives that were being told about what the left and Democrats stood for in a large area of media that people consume, that they looked at Joe Biden and thought, Joe Biden's not the kind of person who I see as radical, as, you know, liberal in this very derogatory way that it's often used. But maybe my person at the local level is less known, or I don't have the same kind of trust or affinity that I have for somebody like Joe Biden. So I think there's a lot going on there that needs to be parsed out. But I will say, I think we have a lot of organizing and on the ground work that needs to be done in every state.
Yeah. Dan, I'd love to hear your commentary there about the down ballot impacts.
Well, let's talk about, you know, when you want to talk about down ballots, you have to talk about impacts at state legislative levels right around the country. And I read an article just the other day that talked about, you know, the highest level of control of state legislatures in the past is 37, where one party controls both houses of a state legislative body. So the Republicans this last year actually gained four more states, where we're now like up to 34 as far as, you know, states that the state that the Republicans control both the House and the Senate of a bicameral state legislature, or control when there's only one House. So it's really interesting to see. Now you see four more states shifting where both are controlled by Republicans. And it does kind of highlight, to Shireen's point, you know, maybe it's as simple as Shireen said, Republicans are better at filling out the entire ballot, right? Versus Democrats pick their favorites and then fade off. It seems, unfortunately, in Shireen's case, they fade right before the county council race, right?
About 37,000 faded out.
About 37,000
from the presidential
killer.
Yeah,
that's tough.
Remember, hey, and that's a big change for Utah because we changed our, you know, it used to be true, especially in Salt Lake County. We did a punch and you can vote for Democrats or Republicans all the way down your ballot. And it's amazing that policy is really hurting Democrats, so to speak. It's just really interesting.
Fascinating. Hey, in the minute or so we have left in this first segment, I want to talk about these Trump pardons. Dan, you're the attorney on the call here. Do you think Trump will really pardon himself or his family? Do you think that's legal? Or what are you predicting over the next several weeks? We got the Michael Flynn pardon. We've got this DOJ probe about a bribery scheme for pardons. Dan, and then I'll ask Serene the same question. What are you predicting?
Well, it's legal, one. Two, presidents always pardon people right at the end of their office. You know what I mean? And Trump is actually one of the first that I've seen have a rolling pardon schedule where he's been pardoning people the whole time, as opposed to, you know, like Barack Obama, when he left office, I think he had a page and it was 100 and something names that were pardoned. And largely to his credit, there were low lying drug offenders, that kind of stuff that, you know, maybe, you know, they got caught and Barack Obama didn't. And so they had a criminal record. Maybe that's it. But, you know, you look at George W. Bush and presidents, that's the tradition. So I think there will be some pardons. And honestly, I hope there's a couple out of Utah. You know, Phil Lyman he did a protest ride. I hope that the president would consider a pardon for someone like that. But you go down and you look at those type of things. I think it will. He can pardon anybody. What you can't do is you can't receive money for a pardon. So the Trump, you know, I don't know anything about, like, you know, a bribery scandal. I understand that that's a concern and we need to watch out for it. I don't know what merit to put into it. It sounds like it's really just salt in the wound, and maybe it's a, hey, we're watching you, president, be careful. You know what I mean? That's probably
Shireen,
decent.
We'll give you the last word on pardons.
So I wouldn't put anything past this president, but I actually think his children are probably more at risk than he is. I think he would more likely take steps to protect himself than them.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Dan McKay and Shireen Gurbani. Stay tuned in our next segment. We're going to talk about, ask the question, what does Ben McAdams do next? Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We want to talk about the federal stimulus. It's in the news again. As we do that, we want to remind our listeners that Utahns have 2 weeks left to apply for COVID housing assistance funds. This is about $20 million in CARES Act funding. And the place to look at that, go to coronavirus.utah.gov and follow the links, and you'll get some good information there. I'm an economist by training. I have been telling anybody that would ask that we need another stimulus package to get us through as a bridge to the vaccines. Gratefully, it's being talked about again. We have, I think, both the House and Senate are back in session. We've got our own Senator Romney and Congressman Ben McAdams taking a lead role on some of this. Shireen, let's go to you first. What are you looking for? What do you expect?
So I've been talking, a number of local business owners reached out to me in a discussion about what's happening. I have seen numerous articles this week talking about the fact that over 450 restaurants have already closed in Utah. And many of these business owners are up against the ropes. They are absolutely in dire need of help to get through the holiday season, to get through to a vaccine, really. And they are calling on, you know, Senators Romney Lee to really lead on this. And I'm so grateful to see Senator Romney out there working on behalf of trying to keep people in their homes, trying to keep these small businesses open. This relief cannot come fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to read the Romney quote because I really love this. This was provided to me by our producer. He said, "I don't like borrowing money. I don't like spending money we don't have. But the time to borrow money, maybe the only time to borrow money, is when there's a crisis, and this is a crisis." And then he said, "We want to help people." Dan, if you were in Congress, I mean, wouldn't you be on the train to try and make this happen?
Well, where the government and, you know, the response to the government's efforts to, you know, deal with the coronavirus have been so costly to so many small business owners and, you know, and really to families across the country, I think it really is a societal burden as we try to look out for what everybody else is. It is interesting to see how far, you know, like the Republican Party has come, where, you know, we started from a place of, you remember the old quote by Ronald Reagan, right? The worst four words are, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, or something like that. And then, yeah. You know, and then Mitt Romney at the same time is saying, hey, we're here to help people, which I totally get. We all knew that stimulus would be back on the table right after the election. And here we are back on the table right after the election. I still think they're going to have to get the support of President Trump. And I also think that, you know, President Trump is not of the mind to have a significant stimulus. I do worry that if you have Mitt Romney be the face of the stimulus, and be the one negotiating with, you know, the president, that it may not actually go that well. But, you know, personalities aside, I think that the country recognizes something needs to be done.
Trump did, however, just a couple of days ago tweet that our, you know, restaurants are in dire straits. So it is something that it's on his radar. I mean, his like entire brain is like spelled out on Twitter. So I know that he is thinking about this, which I do think is a hopeful sign. I also think something that's really interesting that people need to understand is one of the big reasons this has been hung up is this whole issue of liability protections for business owners. So Romney is perfectly comfortable moving forward because it was one of the things that the state legislature here did. They put out protections so that it was harder for businesses to be sued if somebody contracted coronavirus or their employees contracted coronavirus. So that thing, I think, is something that people need to remember, that this is a sticking point for Republicans, and it's one that makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Dan was quoting, you know, doing his quote. I'm going to throw out a quote, Dan, because we want to talk about the appointments that Spencer Cox has just made. You know, there's this saying that a bureaucrat is a job held by a Democrat that a Republican wants. And we've had some great Republican appointments in the Cox administration. This is very hot news. But in addition to the lieutenant governor in Senator Deidre Henderson and John Pierpont, who's, of course, been asked to be chief of staff, and Jennifer Napier Pierce, who's been asked to be the communications director or senior advisor. But we now have Sophia DeCaro running Governor's Office of Management Budget. She's a former legislator. We have Senator Dan Hemmert, who's been asked to lead the Governor's Office of Economic Development. I believe it's Brittany Cummings, who has been asked to be the education advisor. Stephen Lisenby to be a senior advisor to rural affairs. There's others, but wow, this is this has got a lot of legislators. There's a lot of women. And, you know, there's some great diversity here. Sophia DeCaro is a Japanese American. So, Dan, let's get your take. And, you know, you can take that wherever you want. If you want to talk about Senator Hemmert leaving the Senate as a member of leadership, or just in general what you see happening in the Cox appointments.
Well, in general, I will say it is what Lieutenant Governor Cox promised, which is we're seeing a lot of turnover at the top. Right. And you're seeing a lot of new faces. I can kind of start down the list and talk about how great each of the people are and how they will serve well. The interesting part of that whole dynamic, obviously losing Senator Hemmert, who is a dear friend of mine, and, you know, ran for Congress for about 15 minutes earlier this year. And, you know, some of those things that he's had to kind of deal with as his business and those kinds of things have been out there. But as I asked him, you know, like, you know, what would you be looking to do? And it was really interesting. He is very much a cerebral, intelligent, you know, hardworking guy that is, you know, like, able to come up with solutions. And it was so classic what he said to me. And I think this will be typical, really, of the Cox administration. He said, in talking to this new governor, he's convinced that there is going to be a lot of positive steps made that will, you know, help balance and create a better version of the Utah government. And I think Dan Hemmert is a great addition to Spencer Cox. And it just shows how I think Spencer is doing a great job of building good people around him. And Sophia, my goodness. Former House member, worked under, now this will be the fifth governor that she's worked as part of the administration executive branch.
She's fantastic.
And so tons of experience. She's very, very smart, like wicked smart. And I still wish that she was a member of the House, but she will do a great job in the governor's office of management and budget. I did promise her that I would actually read her budgets. And so that's going to be an important step for me.
Good for you, Dan. Shereen, I want to hear your comments. I'll just mention as I turn it to you that, you know, Sophia is a very rare talent. And to get someone who has that mix, and what I'm observing, and I will be honest that I'm biased here because I've been, you know, serving on the executive committee for the Cox transition team. But it's very clear to me that this governor-elect is making a deliberate effort to do his own thing.
Yeah.
He's not retaining just people to retain him. He basically recognizes that this is a time to put a fresh look on state government, and it appears to be happening. Shereen, what are you seeing from the left?
Yeah, I'm just particularly excited about Sophia DeCaro, who is a fantastic human. I just have had not a ton of interactions with her, but I'm always so impressed by her. She's an organizer. She's a dedicated community member. She's a volunteer, and she is absolutely brilliant. So I think she's ready for this role, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, really cool. Hey, let's also talk about something. This is just sort of out of the blue, and then I want to talk about Ben McAdams, but Prattville Falls has been making some news. And Dan, I don't know if you've followed this at all, but I know Shereen has, and it's one of these issues of what's the public role and what's the private role. What can you tell our listeners, Shereen?
So this is a really interesting issue. Just I think last night, the Provo City Council issued a resolution in support of protecting and keeping Prattville Falls in the public's hands. But in 2008, Prattville Falls was purchased by Utah County for about $2.4 million. And there's a proposal now to sell it for $459,000, which seems like a terrible financial move. But also what it would do is put into the hands of a private owner. And I think anytime you have something as special as Prattville Falls, it's something that needs to be protected. And I would really love to see that happen. And there will be a public hearing on Wednesday, December 9th in Utah County, if you've got strong feelings about it. But that's something that I thought was interesting. And also just it seemed like a fiscally irresponsible move.
Yeah, Dan, we cover it all here on both sides of the aisle.
And I was just going to say, I totally agree with Shereen. I've looked at like the proper, like everybody wants to talk about what government's supposed to do. But I do think preserving lifestyle and preserving an open space and everybody pitching in to buy open space, you know, so the county buying open space and preserving something that way. Me, I think that's pretty amazing. And the idea that, you know, I wonder, you know, for those of you who pay attention closely to Utah County politics, you have an outgoing commissioner, and that outgoing commissioner is really, you know, part of a 2 out of 3 votes. And I think that those two, Tanner Ainge and Nathan Ivey, are ready to make sure that my prediction is that their meeting will produce a vote in favor of putting a conservation easement on all of that ground so that it's protected. And that would, I think, be a fork in the eye to the next administration.
Yeah, protected in perpetuity. You know, I'm a Westerner, but I've spent a lot of time on the East Coast, and I used to teach at a girls' camp in Maine. And I still remember being on a canoe trip and coming to an island in the ocean with big private property signs on it, and it was so foreign to me. So I love our Western heritage in that way. I want to talk about Ben McAdams. I just put it out this way. Ben is a rare, rare talent. So try and name someone for me that has been a state senator, that has served in local government as a mayor, who's been a congressman, who has a professional law degree, who is a product of the Utah culture. This guy can do anything. And I'm just wondering, Shereen, Dan, what do you think he's going to do next? Shereen, let's go to you first.
Well, I hope he takes a little break, a little time for himself. I think it would be a good idea to recharge. I'm sure this was a difficult and painful election. It's certainly been a difficult year. I mean, he suffered a pretty terrible case of COVID, and I know was very sick earlier this year. I think if there's I hope that he will turn his talents back to Utah. We could use him. He is such a kind and generous leader. I really have enjoyed the moments that he's, you know, been willing to share with me. I've always been impressed by his just graciousness and willingness to help. And I know that he could truly do anything.
Dan, what do you see next for the congressman?
Boy, you gave his resume, and I thought, man, there are a lot of things that he could do really to benefit the state. I mean, I would still say there's some space in the Cox administration. Drag him in. Let's see what he can do.
You know, what's interesting is someone like Congressman McAdams, his public service, he's foregone a lot of private time with his family and private revenue for his family. So, you know, he'll have a lot of options, but I like to think that society's been investing in him. And that as they've invested in him, he can continue to give back. And so I'm really hopeful that he does take a break, but I'm also hopeful that he thinks really big about what to do next. And it would be my hope that he remains in public service. Hey, we've got to end. We've got just a couple of seconds left. Something you're grateful for, Shireen, and Dan, something you're grateful for.
I continue to be just incredibly grateful for the ways that people are finding creative, unique ways to connect in this unusual time.
Dan, your quick item.
I'm thankful for Anthony Scoma. He does such a great job keeping us on task.
And he is our producer. This is Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Thanks, everybody, for listening.